Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Splatterhouse looks like an actual serial killer's like basement. Mortal Kombat really just looks like the Halloween prop shop.
Mortal Kombat is a game, the fatality thing, right? Just, we've become so used to it, we don't think about how weird and brutal this is. It's not the actual, like, I'm going to rip your heart out in front of you and, like, take a bite out of it or whatever Kano does. It's that you can only do the fatality when your opponent is at your mercy, cannot fight back, and is just dazed. At that point, you could just let them fall. You do nothing and they die. But you could also choose to rip their head out. Mm-hmm. You know, like literally unscrew their head from their spine and throw it like a beach ball, whatever it is you do.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinata, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
I guess I have no choice.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about Welcome to Turrican. Oh, Super Turrican. And it doesn't really do that, does it?
It doesn't do that, no.
It's too bad. Shame. Yeah, that was the Amiga version of Turrican that did that, right?
This one doesn't say anything, and the intro music is really bad. I'm sorry about that, but it's true. I don't know, it's not really cool. It's like... And then it's like, I'm like, wait, yeah. Hold on. What happened
here? So, who's with me to complain about the music?
I'm Bobinator, and I like this game's music. Thank you very much.
I'm Kyle, and I only said the intro music is butts, and the rest of the music is pretty good. It's not the best Turrican soundtrack, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Did we finish talking about the who made it? I don't think we actually said.
Yeah, let's go through it here. Don't bother. So this one was nominated by Fallopian Groove on Stitcher. So Fallopian Groove gave us a 5-star review on Stitcher, and Fallopian Groove nominated Super Turrican, and therefore we had to do it. Super Turrican was developed by Factor 5, and it was published in the United States by Seika Corporation, and in Europe by Hudson Soft, of all people. But that sounds about right. Like,
Bomberman and Turrican have a lot in common, right? Like, they're both about... Yeah,
earliest release date and territory appears to be the United States, May 1993, although who knows. This is, I believe, it's the first Turrican game that's actually platform exclusive, right?
So Mega Turrican?
Yeah, I believe it is.
No, Mega Turrican, isn't that kind of Turrican 3?
Mega Turrican was on Amiga, yeah.
Okay. Why the hell did they call it Mega Turrican then? I'm sorry, I'm getting sidetracked.
Mega Drive, I guess?
No, because it's on the Mega Drive, so it's called Mega Turrican, but it's just a port. Like, that.
Did they put Turrican 2 out on the Mega Drive? Maybe that's why.
I think that Universal Soldier game is Turrican 2. You know,
yeah, so they couldn't. Yeah, they couldn't say Turrican 3, because everybody would be like, where's Turrican 2?
And Turrican 1, which is not on the platform.
They called it Mega Turrican, and then with Yeah, so Super Turrican and Super Turrican 2, I think, are the only two, like, platform-exclusive Turricans.
Although I believe Super Turrican, the first level of this game is a soft remake of the first level in Turrican, right? Like, it's a very similar-ish kind of level?
I honestly don't.
It's got the same music, I think.
I find the level design in these games to be not bad, but very difficult to wrap my brain around.
So this
it's
is
hard
Turrican.
To know where I am, yeah.
And it is, yeah, like, it's the same game in many ways, but it is different. Hardcore Gaming 101 has a full article on the Turrican games if you're obsessive for different details between them, because we're not going to remember them all, because, no.
We did discuss the Turrican game a long while back. I think that was the original game, so...
Yes, we did the original game. We ranked it quite highly. If anyone ever wants to badmouth our suggestions about European and English game design or British game design...
Yeah. And we don't hate European games. Let's get that out of the way.
We put it at 67. Right. I don't know. That was probably in like the 50s when we started, but 67-ish.
Which is incredibly high. Like, out of how many rankings do we have as of this recording?
About it was 400-something. 434-ish.
Yeah, so that's crazy. Yeah, so it's very, very high. And that's for the Amiga Turrican?
That was a mixed ranking for Amiga and the Commodore 64 one, I believe.
Yeah, you got to give it up to the C64 version of that game, because it's so...
For existing and being pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, no music and all that, but it's very good. But yeah, the Amiga version is the one to play if you want the rockin' tunes. But yeah, the Super Turrican, so is it like, I forget, is it kind of like a pseudo remake of Turrican or?
Not really. It's kind of, it's very much its own thing.
It seems like it, cause it doesn't have the, like the grappling hook or whatever that thing is, right? It does the, lightning ray freeze.
It's kind
freeze
of
lightning.
It's
makes
kind
sense
of,
out of that.
It's kind of based off the gameplay of Mega Turrican, the, Genesis one, but I think most, if not all the levels are entirely new.
Yeah, so how do we describe Turrican? Like, you should go back and listen to episode 27 to hear us talk about Turrican. It's that so long ago, I can't remember very much about what was said other than that we discussed, like, the difference between Rainbow Arts and Factor 5 and, like, the weird development situation.
I think we compared to Metroid and Psychonix Oscar.
Yeah, and so, like, it's a run-and-gun, but it's a run-and-gun with, like, kind of very expansive sort of Sonic-esque level design. I don't know what to call it.
I would like, not it's
Sonic-esque. It is closer to kind of a lightweight, like, Metroid-ish, more Castlevania, I guess. Like, each of the levels is kind of weirdly open, and there are some pathing through it, but it's just kind of slightly open. I would say, alright, so let me describe it in a way that's not really specific to a game, but just more, the levels are kind of slightly more like real spaces that you can move through, like, you know, you go through mountain ranges and bases and that kind of thing, and the level design is just kind of holistic and just, well, it just kind of feels like a place, rather than,
right.
Just being like one linear shoot through, though there are clearly, like, this bit is supposed to be challenging because this jumping bit is difficult. Like, it's got that to it as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's like, but you're moving through, like, a space. So you're going, like, in through an area, then the next stage is, like, it does bleed into each other pretty clearly for Super Turrican.
So the thing with this game is I'd say they kind of toned down the exploration aspect a bit and kind of focused a little more on the shooting and the action.
Well, let's I think we got to describe a little bit more about what, I mean, it's been a long time since we talked about Turrican, so it's like, I think what surprises most people about this game is, yeah, it's a run and gun, it's like Contra, but the level design is very, I don't know, the reason why I call it Sonic-esque is not necessarily because of the branching paths, or not branching paths, but more of just like the verticality of the level design, and there's like a lot of things where it's like, if you could just barely make the jump, you can do something. And it's also got some cool stuff that's been there since the original Turrican, the way that, like, you know, certain, like, invisible power-ups can show up, and if you don't destroy them, you can use them as platforms and reach other areas of the game, stuff like that. But
can I say I really like that aspect? I think it's really, like, fun, because every time you stumble upon these, like, secret paths that you accidentally shoot, you're like, oh, that was cool. Like,
yeah.
I find it fun. Like, it's just this weird gamey sort of thing. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but the game does, it's kind of like you can infer where they are, because it's like, there's a platform there and I can't reach it, so there must be some secret platform somewhere.
And sometimes there are. It's kind of like Super Mario Brothers logic. And of course, like, the original designer of Turrican, what's his name?
Manfred something?
Is he the Gianna Sisters guy?
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, like, we know that he likes Super Mario Brothers. So I think that was, like, kind of an homage, in a way, in the original Turrican. And remember, like, in the original Turrican, I think when they show up, those things aren't, like, clearly, like, power-up blocks. They're more like, they look like regular, like, floating platforms, in a way. They look weirdly non-special. But anyway, so yeah, it's like it's this crazy hybrid of a game. And the interesting thing about Super Turrican, I think, is that it feels like if you're going into this after playing, you know, Contra 3 or Super Metroid for sure, like it's going to feel a little bit weird because it's still very much like the classic Turrican gameplay, which means you can't shoot up or at diagonals. You can crouch and shoot, and you can look forward and shoot, and that's it. And you got like the three main weapons, which is, you know, like the spread gun, the strong straight ahead gun, and then the bouncy off the walls gun, right?
Yeah, like, and then the power it's got system, and this is kind of odd because you've got like make your gun better power ups, and then you've basically got change to a different gun power up. There's no,
and you'll end up changing guns so many times without meaning to that it's almost pointless to even try to keep your same weapon. That is very frustrating.
Generally, I always felt like spread guns like the best choice to use, but I always like spread gun games.
What I like about the way that the weapons are designed is that there was a lot of thought that went into it, and I think this is mostly from earlier Turrican games and not this one specifically, but at least you can say they were smart enough not to mess with perfection, which is they realized like, okay, so because you can't shoot up and at diagonals and stuff like that, like it makes the game a little bit more challenging. And so when you've got the, you know, the regular straight ahead, like, gun, that one's the most powerful, I believe.
Yeah. The, rapid fire blue one. It
does the most damage. Yeah. But it doesn't reach as many, you know, areas, and you can't shoot up or at diagonals, so that can be a real problem. You got to do a lot of jumping and shooting.
And this one, you've got as we mentioned, the electric lasso, which freezes enemies. I think it kills some, or you can hurt it platforms
mostly freezes
with it.
Enemies,
but yeah. And that is angled. You can angle that.
And it's got the weird, like, buzzsaw morph ball type thing, like the Mario Mario.
Yeah,
thing, but it's like uncontrollable almost.
It's a weird one.
Mostly useful for like very particular enemies, but mostly for like in this game, the enemies don't respawn, I think. So if you like discover a secret and have to like backtrack a bunch to get back to where you were, like you end up using that thing to kind of do it quickly because there's nothing to run into. And then, but then anyway, like because you can't shoot up and at diagonals, like you've got the bouncing gun. So that's like the weakest one. But when you shoot at walls, it'll bounce off it at 45 degree angles. And so that's like the best way of reaching a lot of enemies in like the vertical areas where you can't normally hit them without jumping into the line of fire.
Yeah, there's like a machine factory piping sort of thing. I think it's level.
We're going to get to that. I absolutely hate that.
Can I talk about the gameplay a little bit?
I am talking about the game.
He's literally talking about the game.
I was just going to say something. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead. All right.
All right. So compared to this game, I really feel like the developers kind of maybe took a little more cues from more popular Japanese design games of this kind of genre. And I won't necessarily that those choices make this game better, but I do feel they make for a somewhat more approachable game if you're used to games in this style.
So, for example, what would you say fits that?
For one thing, I feel you're not really being swarmed with quite as many enemies. You kind of have a better idea of where they're going to be as you move through the level.
In the early stages, yes, I think so.
I find it, before, because you mentioned the swarming, can I just mention that they broke the game's balance because, you don't have Turrican health anymore, you just take a hit, and then you lose a chunk of health.
Right.
Which makes those flying little tiny bastards the worst freaking things in the universe, because they come at you from weird angles, and usually they just chip off the tiniest bit, because they just narrowly touch you, but in this one, the endless freaking spawning little fly bastards just wipe your health.
Cal, remind our listeners what Turrican health is.
Yeah, so we literally do call it Turrican health. I don't know if there's a more correct version, but we've always referred to it as Turrican health on the show. I believe we always just call it Turrican health because it's Turrican. Basically, instead of having any sort of invulnerability and any sort of anything, your health is basically a bar, and every time you're overlapped by an enemy, you take damage. And that's the gist of it, really. You The idea is that things that overlap you are dangerous, and things that move quickly are actually less dangerous because they pass through your hitbox quicker. And in Tarrakan's case, you don't, there's no knockback. You just, health and things just pass through you, and then you just keep going. So, this is really great to think about, is like the first boss in Tarrakan is always the giant floaty ass hand, which is always just a funny thing to see. But it's really dangerous in the original Tarrakan, because if it overlaps you and you're in the middle of it, it'll pretty much take every single ounce of health because it's a giant hand.
Right, because by the time you get out of the way, you're still touching it the entire time.
You lose
so it's like,
health.
As it's touching you, it's draining your health.
Whereas this one, it's just like, oh, you take an annoyingly large amount of knockback and lose health, which is not great in some of the platforming segments because you fall down a lot, but...
I guess it is kind of a trade-off, really. I do appreciate that they were really kind of taking cues from more recent games of the era. You do notice that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... What I like about that is I feel like in Tarrakan games, it's very easy to get overwhelmed with what's happening on screen and to not really pay attention to how much health you have left, because you're just like, it doesn't do anything to you, so you just keep moving, and then you're like, oh my god, I'm almost dead. I don't like, that's my main issue with this game too, though, is that like, I feel like that makes it a little bit easier because you're a little bit more cognizant of how much health you have left. But, yeah, it's still got that overwhelming.
It makes some of the platform
issue
really frustrating because there's lots of bits where there'll be like things that'll hit you as you're jumping and then you fall down a hole and die instantly. So thanks.
Right.
Game.
Yeah. So there's, so anyway, to finish what I was saying earlier about the weapons, the three weapons, what I like about this is like the holy trinity of, it's not like Contra where you can get like, you know, five or six different weapons really. So it's like, it works really well because the weapon that allows you to angle your shots sort of by reflecting them is the weakest and it has the lowest amount of coverage. But it's like the only way to like safely traverse certain areas. And then the spread gun's kind of in between. So it's like you don't have to worry as much about like, you can clear a big area in front of you, but then again, like it's not super duper powerful. It's not as powerful as the other one. I think that works really well because if you could fire at diagonals and you could fire up and down, it would really kind of break that balance.
It definitely takes a few seconds getting used to. Like I'll be perfectly honest, when I loaded up the game, I just immediately like, why can't I shoot up? And I was like, oh yeah, it's a Tarrakan game. Of course you can't shoot up. It's not how these work. Which is fine. You do get used to it and then you see where they're going with it. And as long as the level design is rock solid, it works really well.
Yeah, and so now we got to talk about the level design. So it's kind of like, again, like I don't want to... I look at especially the early stages in Super Tarrakan, I think are good examples of this style of level design, which is like, it's worlds with a lot of verticality. There's a lot of hidden areas, secrets you can find. Sometimes you can move through areas and don't realize you found a secret until later. Which just happened to me in my most recent playthrough. I like fell down what I thought was a pit and I ended up in some kind of secret. I must have skipped something and there's like, you know, different ways around it. And the jumping is usually kind of tricky on the tricky side. I think it's not that you don't jump high or that there's any kind of weirdness to it. It's more like, it's just like the way that their habits of placing platforms just barely out of reach gets kind of old.
there's a later level in the game, which is the most infuriating thing that I think has ever been developed for a platforming game. And it's got that frustrating jumping aspect, but it's also a nonsensical ice world where you slide around like a buttery idiot. And it is just the worst. Like they combine their two least like quality aspects. Like let's make all these platforms almost kill you, but also now you slide around and your jump just arbitrarily stops working in midair sometimes. So watch out for the ice stage because it ruins the game.
I mean, and there's other weird stuff that happens that it's like you do have to know it's coming so you can kind of prepare for it, and you do have to move very carefully through several areas even in the early stages. But like for example, there's like a Super Mario Brothers 2 style wind thing.
Yeah, the wind is
like
great.
Level
it just appears.
Wind thing. Yeah, with like the leaves to indicate, oh, the wind is blowing. Then you wait for the...
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, you know how, like, you know, usually when you have, like, wind in games, it's like, no wind. you know, like it goes from no wind to light wind with nothing happening to warn you that it's about to get windy, and then the wind comes and pushes you around. In this one, it's just no wind, wind, no wind, wind. So you'll attempt to jump, and then it'll decide to blow the wind, and you'll fall off the cliff.
Hey, guess what? So that's kind of weird. But, like, again, like, I think a lot of these design choices come from the microcomputer, like, you know, the Commodore 64 kind of level design. Or not level design, but game difficulty levels are...
It's all over the place.
It is crazy, and that, I think, was considered kind of normal. And so it's hard to... When you transpose it directly to the Super Nintendo, it feels a little bit off. But then the I think early... The first areas are pretty fair for the most part.
They're comparatively fair. And look, I mean, as you mentioned, there's a lot of secrets and there's a lot of extra lives in those secrets.
Yes.
Not many extra lives where you're going to go if you kind of follow the strictest, most like linear shoot through the level. But if you start going off path, the game is like, have an extra life, have another extra life, have more extra lives. But watch out, there is a slight time limit, so be careful.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting that. Every time that happens to me, I'm like, I'm doing pretty good. I got a bunch of stuff. Like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I'm running out. But, you know, usually by that time you found like six extra lives or something. And they'll even tell you at the end of this area, like, you found like, six out of nine extra lives.
It's like Wolfenstein or Doom, where it kind of like taunts you, like, huh, you only found 3 of 27 extra lives, moron.
Yeah. I get the feeling the difficulty of this game is going to be directly proportional how much time you spend looking for all those one-ups.
There's that. I mean, it gets
like just cruel and like unfair.
So, but like, that's a good point, Bob. Is like the other thing is that you respawn pretty close to where you died. So
that's actually my favorite thing is you respawn close to where you died, and continuing is not too bad. You do respawn fairly generously.
It's fair in Super Turrican for sure in that respect. But yeah, so where would you say either of you, like, where would you say the game starts to take a turn for the sadistic?
I mean, honestly, I'd say it gets a lot more difficult just from World 2, because there are a lot of traps you can't really see very well unless you're paying a really close attention to what's ahead of you.
What's World 2 like again?
It's the machine world.
Yes.
With all the flamethrowers and the little pistons you can barely see until you step on them.
There's only four worlds total, right?
There's only technically four worlds in a way. The first world goes into, like, water and ruins, which is a little, like, you know, it kind of moves from outside in the mountains to inside with water. It doesn't really technically count, I think, as a different world, but the tile set almost completely changes. And then, yeah, you go to the machine
lava,
factory.
Right? There's, like, the lava stuff, right?
Yeah, the lava stuff, which I think is still technically part of the same world or something.
I think it is, yeah. So you're, like, it's much more, like, natural than you're in, like, the machine world.
Yeah.
And it gets bonkers. It gets crazy hard to just know what's happening because there's so much stuff happening on the screen. Part of that is just like credit to Factor 5 for figuring out how to like fill the screen with bullets and enemies and stuff. Like, it's almost too technically advanced for its own good in that respect. Like, it's just too much crap.
I think
on
they're
the screen.
Rare as hell. Like, follow up rendering Ranger or whatever is just insane about that. I don't know if that's like a super rare SNES game, so don't try and buy it. I think it was like $200-$300 last time I looked. But anyway, the thing is, like, it's funny that you mentioned the machine factory, because to me, the machine factory is kind of where it just uses a different kind of Euro design. Like, that's where they just dump in the other kind of Euro design, which is the sort of pattern, memory, very strict, like, you move here, then this happens. You move here, and then this happens. You know, it's that kind of, you have to... There's no openness in that area.
So,
it's just, do this in this order, and you will survive, collect the health, because you will have just enough health to continue on if you keep recollecting that health. It's the level design shifts dramatically between World 1 and World 2, basically.
Yeah. And, Bob, anything to say before I unload?
Did we talk about the weird director's cut at all?
No, we'll have to do that at the very end, but I want to finish talking about this area because it is where most people are going to give up, I think.
Right.
So I do not agree with the design decisions that were made in this area. And although I don't know enough about its like contemporaries, like other Amiga games, for example, like what they were like, but it just feels like the problem is it's one of signaling. Like, it has trouble communicating the hazards to the player, Whereas, like, what you should be doing, like, it's got, you know, fire jets and steam jets, but some of the steam jets don't have fire coming out of them later. And other steam jets are just steam jets, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then on top of that, like, so you got that. Then you got the conveyor belts, and then you've got the water or whatever, the running green fluid.
It's like sewer green water.
Which, oddly enough, the green fluid, like, if you are trying to walk upstream, it doesn't seem to be moving that fast, but you cannot walk upstream. You have to jump through it. Whereas the conveyor belts seem to be moving much faster, but you can walk, you know, slowly make progress by walking. Yeah. So there's just so much stuff happening on screen. The movable area, like, you know, your most parts of those stage of that area, that world, are very narrow. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hazards, like, packed into it. Like, the enemies aren't necessarily that difficult. And there's cool stuff. Like, there's, like, the classic Turrican enemies, like, the little, like, little munchkin things. And you can jump on top of them in this game. I think, is this the first one where you can do that, or is it?
I think that's, like, a running gag for the entire series.
There's a running gag where you can jump on the most basic little mushroom guys, as if it's some sort of, like, yeah, like, shout out to Mario, essentially. Yeah.
They always make a funny noise, too. I think in one of them, they make, like, the R2-D2 yell, so that's funny.
I think you can actually jump in more enemies in this game. Like, it's kind of a little bit vaguer. Like, some enemies I think you can jump on, and you can definitely jump on them if you freeze them.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. And the freezing aspect of it is a big part of the game. And I should also mention that we didn't talk about this, but the disadvantage to the freezing lightning, the freeze lightning, just saying that, what were they thinking? It's awesome, but in the stupidest possible way. But, it's like, the thing is, it's like you can, that has a 360 degree range of motion, but you can only do it while you're standing perfectly still. You cannot do it in the air. You cannot do it while you're walking forward. And that kind of makes it, bounces it out, because a lot of times the tough enemies to reach, you can't use your lightning, freeze lightning to reach them, because you'd have to jump in order to do it. Anyway, but like the problem is, again, like I said, one of signaling. So it's when you've got that much stuff on the screen and you're always like, unless you're an idiot, you've got auto fire on in this game, because you should just be firing all the time.
Yes, you can turn it off in the menu if you feel like it.
That would be dumb. I don't
know why you would.
Don't ever do that.
Yeah. But it is an option.
And the thing, like, that fills the screen with stuff, in addition to the enemies, in addition to, like, the fireball jets, in addition to the, like, pistons and, like, the torpedoes that just drop from the ceiling or explode from the floor for some reason. Like, what useful purpose could that possibly serve? But anyway, it's like those things aren't different enough from the environment they're in for you to notice them when there's a bunch of stuff happening on the screen. So, like, for example, the worst things in that area are the pistons that kind of slowly move up from the floor. And guess what?
They look like, see them.
You can't see them, because they are the same color and shape and size as the rest of the environment. So it just looks like it's a thing that could be. And this was kind of my issue, like, it's like, I want to be careful, because I think there's some of these things come from, like, a platform familiarity that we just don't have. But on the Super Nintendo, you don't have that excuse, because you know how it's supposed to work. Like, you don't add a hazard to the area that looks the same as the rest of the area unless there's, like, space around it to kind of signal to the player, don't touch this, right?
I mean, that is definitely an aspect of the Amiga, partially because of the way, you know, color palettes and stuff worked. You know, you're like, well, we got, like, one color palette, so everything's the same color at the moment. Like,
right.
There's an aspect of that.
I mean, Super Nintendo games can have that problem, too, because they just have so many colors. It's like the temptation to make everything look naturally a part of its environment is always there. But I think because most of the developers for the Super NES got their, you know, cut their teeth on the Nintendo, I still think of it as the Nintendo, NES, but yeah. it is the the original NES or the Famicom or whatever. They cut their teeth on that. And in those games, it was kind of understood, like, okay, so moving objects are usually going to be in a different color palette than the background and stuff. And that made it doable, because you would always know when you saw something, oh, that bright orange ass thing is, like, probably dangerous. Like, even if it looks like an oatmeal raisin cookie, like, it's probably dangerous because it's bright ass orange, you know? It's stuff like that. Or they'll do something like, you know, where the background is, like, completely black and behind it to just kind of accentuate what it is. I mean, I was talking about this, like, where you look at Fantasy World Dizzy, for example, and the candles will kill you. and they don't look particularly different than the rest of the environment on the Amiga version. In the Spectrum version, they do, but not on the Amiga version. And,
Like, whereas with Castlevania, it's not like that. It's like, it's, you understand because of the way they're placed and where they're placed, and that they're not going to hurt you. And if there were a candle that were going to hurt you, it would be different from the others. It would be either like bigger, or it would be directly in your path, or something that would kind of, you know, communicate to the player that something was up here.
Well, I mean, what I will say basically is, I do think that the levels can be pretty main. It's a shortish game, by the way. Like, it's a pretty short game.
Only about an hour, yeah. So,
But you won't get through it in an hour.
It doesn't really, I don't think it stands out on the Amiga, like, sort of design as this being, like, this isn't abnormal. I think I do agree it's, it is pretty, like, business as usual. I didn't personally have, like, a lot of problem with that. I was like, those things are moving, so they're probably dangerous, was like my thinking.
How did you even notice that? Because there's like a billion moving things on the screen.
I know, and I'm like, moving things, bad. Like, that's that. I don't know if that's my,
and it's like they put
knowledge
really,
of the Amiga they put kicking them in
really tight corridors, and then right in between like conveyor belts, so you're constant, and the flame jets that come out.
The flame jets are kind of like mean business, but again, it's just like, I do think that there is, like, there's definitely some, like, this is how the European developers did kind of lean on this. This is definitely a little bit of that going on. Just like, well, this damages you, all right? And you get hit by it once or twice or three times. And then from that, then you replay the game and you're like, watch out for that thing, because that thing still hurts.
Yeah, but you will miss it. Even when you know to look for it, you will end up running into them constantly. Because they're just not
also
big enough
or
bright.
Also, the game kind of designed to make you run into them. Like, the levels are kind of push you towards that sort
of thing. That's a problem. But I don't think it ever gets to the point. Like, it is hard. Even if you're playing it on easy mode, it is still very hard. And,
Well, again, that's you know, it's
a short
not
game,
that long,
but
so it's,
yeah, exactly. So I think they're getting value out of it. And these games are very much of that school of design where it's like, we're going to make a really complicated, smoothly controlling, beautiful game with excellent music. And, but you know, it's going to be kind of short, but we'll make it hard enough and have enough secrets that you can really get your money's worth out of it. And everybody's playing a trainer ROM anyway, or, you know, a disc image or something. So,
so thankfully you don't actually need one of those to beat it. The ice stage is just the worst. And if Tenga was here, I did talk to him about this game. He hates that level as well. So I feel like the snow level, which I don't know if you got through to the snow level. If you do, it's the freaking worst. It really is.
It is bad.
The challenge of the snow level is basically succeeding at basic and simple jumps while an asshole throws snowballs at you. It's just ridiculous. It's so mean. But and before we do rank it, I want to mention the last stage as a spoiler. The last stage is just Alien. Like, not kind of Alien. Not inspired by Alien.
It is the Alien.
It is like lawsuit worthy Alien. Like,
even more so than Contra, right?
It is the most Alien because the level itself is Alien. Like, it's just Alien extruded into a level, and the enemies are aliens and facehuggers, and the background is Alien, and then there's also egg sacs, and everything is Alien. And because clearly they actually were aware of Giga's works, there's a level which is riding on H.R. Giga's like bone alien skeleton train. Like, that is the level. Is you fight Alien while riding the alien train in Alien, and it's like, all right, this is the most, like, 80s, 90s, grim teenager sort of like, yeah, what if it was bones and, you know, phallic shapes, just like Alien?
Yeah, what if it's nothing but weird, like, stretchy phalluses and boobs and, like...
It's really funny to see because it's the most insane, nonsensical thing. The background is like a digitized picture of Alien, basically. It's so ridiculous. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
This game really went off the rails in the last stage. Because the other stages are pretty nice. They've got, like, an Amiga look to them. They're a little bit, like, color insane. Like, they're just like, ooh, colors!
Almost too colorful, yeah. But the beautiful backgrounds, you know, like,
and the
just
last
the
stage
colors.
Is, like, just digitized alien ass. It's like, wow, this is insane. Almost worth getting to. But, yeah, and the last boss is Alien. Like, it's just...
It's Alien. We got to rank it. What do we think about the music really fast? Really super fast.
I think the music was very good. I definitely enjoyed it a lot. A lot of tracks are remixes of Megaturken, but that's okay because that game had good music too.
I'd say surprisingly diverse array. I think you could almost accuse Mr. Hulselbeck, who did the music for this one as well, and most of the Tarkin game, of his music kind of being quite samey. Like, he's got like three or four really good tunes that he throws out and then mixes a bit, and you're like, I really like these three or four tunes because they're fantastic, but they're all I seem to hear from him. This one, it's got some cool stuff that's a little bit different, and he experiments a bit with atmospheric stuff in a couple of the levels. Like, it's just like, you know, like almost that sort of Super Metroid-ish kind of like, you know, dings and pipe sounds and things, just kind of not really proper music, but more just kind of trying to get an atmosphere going. So I do like it. I don't think the some of the instruments are quite as punchy as they were on the Amiga or in Mega Tarkin.
Yeah.
They're a bit lighter, which kind of, I blame the SNES for that, but
it is. Yeah. It's a weird platform for the music. I don't think I've ever played it, but I've heard the TurboGrafx-16 version of Tarkin has some really bitchin' tunes. Like really good, like, version of those. I've got to say, like, the thing, like, I get the appeal of Tarkin in the games and I love them. The one thing I don't kind of feel as strongly about is the music never seems as good to me as it does to everybody else, especially because it's coming from out of like the Commodore 64 realm where there's just such great, you know, like there's such a tradition of amazing, like crazy tunes that just go on forever and all kinds of directions. And Tarkin doesn't do that. It's very much like NES style. Like,
I think, you know, the important thing about Tarkin music in general is simply that it's quite excellent, but it's also attached to a really great game, which I think helps it a lot.
Yeah, it's good, you know, association,
if,
yeah.
If you get, like, an association, like, obviously, you know, like, if you, like, Monty on the Run on the Commodore 64 has kick-ass, like, that is a phenomenal tune. I love that tune utterly, but when you do try and play Monty on the Run, you're a bit like, oh, this is rough. Like, it's not the worst, and that's a good Commodore 64 game.
Right.
Whereas, you know, this game, or the Tarkin franchise in general, has actually got really great gameplay that you can appreciate even if you didn't grow up with those specific games.
Even now, it plays pretty well. And if I can get into it, I'm pretty picky about action gameplay like this for 2D games. If I can get into it, I feel like anybody can. And that's just because I'm biased in favor of my own opinions.
And where do we want to put strong this? Positive association is what sells Tarkin as well. Also, because
But it's just like the fun of it, of just like running through an area and just filling it with bullets.
Yeah, like you fill it with bullets while you've got some like good music going. And I like some of the tunes especially. You know, like some of them are really nice. Almost none of them suit the levels they're in, which is the main problem.
It's kind of fun though.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the music, I think it's because a lot of it's really kind of upbeat, that sort of stuff. Not really the kind of thing you'd think of about a game about murdering robots and insects.
Yeah, you expect more heavy metal, and there's not a lot, especially in this one.
No, it's all very, like, I think it's very much like the kind of eccentric video game loving people who made these games.
Yeah.
They just, they were the kind of people who really just played everything they can get their hands on, and they were smart enough and perceptive enough to recognize what was good about, you know, stuff like, you know, for example, like I said, like, you know, the original Tarkin is weirdly inspired by Super Mario Brothers in ways that you wouldn't expect, and it works very well.
This game has Gundam in it, by the way. One of the bosses is basically a Gundam in high heels. That's the boss.
And you can jump on top of the gun, I think, right?
I didn't try that because I don't touch the enemy sprites.
Yeah, I always save up my screen clearing super bombs for the boss.
Yeah.
So it's like you've got like 10 of them by the time you get to the boss. And you're just like, yeah, in your face, dude. And they're dead.
That's fun. Screen clearing is pretty cool. Can I just mention that when you're talking about the Hulselbeck's music, didn't he like admit that he had accidentally lifted an E song, I think, for one of his games? Like, he had somehow accidentally been able to get an East song, and he channeled it into one of
the games. Yeah, that was Jim Power, I believe, that game was.
Yeah, like, that's the kind of level you're talking about. Like, this guy had heard East in, like, the 80s or something, or early 90s. Like, he'd managed to hear that, and that's pretty, like, obscure stuff to manage to have, like, absorbed that music and then put it out again.
Accidentally, kind of, right?
Yeah, like, I genuinely believe that he was just like, he started humming it, and he's like, that's a really good tune, I'm going to put that in. And, you know, if you ever compose music, it's easy.
Yeah, it happens all the time. You'll be like, this sounds pretty good, and now I do this, and now I do this. Hey, this comes together really well. It sounds really natural. Then later on, you're like, it was like a Tenacious D thing from, like, back, like, before they were, you know, a super thing, big thing. It's like, they're like, you know, sometimes you gotta like manufacture Inspirato, and they're doing like rocket, rocket, all of my rocket sauce, all of my fucking rocket sauce. Oh, and then like an ice cream truck pulls up, and it's like the same song. And they're like, okay,
okay,
so yeah. So like, yeah, where do we want to rank it? Is it better or worse than the original Turrican? I mean,
I would say it's better, and I know some listeners might not agree with that.
But some people in this conversation might not agree.
I think it. Technically is better, but the thing is like it is so much just Turrican with like a very minor differences.
Okay.
The problem is to me it kind of guts out a little bit of what made Turrican really interesting. Like specifically it condenses the stages in a way that I thought the most interesting thing about Turrican was those stage sizes.
You know what? I will admit you're right. I think it does loosen me up the exploration aspect.
What about I'm looking at I would put it. Okay, so this is a tough one. This is a tough one. I thought I had an idea, but I would put it below Ranger X, below Ikaruga, below. Yeah, sorry, got to keep going.
You're gonna end up like you're gonna get down to like 249.
I put it above Blazing Lasers, Slime World. I'm sorry, Cal, but it's true.
I think you're completely wrong, and I think that even like halfway through this game, you're like, okay, I'm done. Like that's not a ringing endorsement.
I'm looking at the Battle Zone area, Battle Zone 1998. I want to put it. It's got to go below Golden Axe. It's got to go below Arkanoid. Mm-hmm. But I could put it above Battle Zone.
And that I would put it above Battle Zone.
And by the way, that would put it above Parasol Stars, which is pretty good, and Batman for the NES, which is really good. But I feel like there's like enough. At least I feel like there's enough of an audience out there for this game that hasn't discovered it that it's worth kind of promoting it in that way. Like there's a lot of people in. I mean, granted, the European audience is huge, and they all understand how great Turrican is, but that's not...
Okay.
There's plenty of people out there who haven't played Turrican.
One thing, can we put above Goemon's Great Adventure?
It would be above Goemon's Great Adventure.
Okay.
I mean, guys, 229 is Tempest 2000, but two above that is Devil's Crush? Like...
Shh, don't draw attention to the arbitrariness and stupidity of this whole concept.
Devil's Crush.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
I will do it. Actually, there's a platformer at 235, a stall on the Saturn.
Better
not. I like the stall a little bit better.
Like, to me, it does kind of fit more. Because it has sharp edges that aren't actually... That I don't think benefited in any way is my main problem with it. Like, it's short and has sharp edges. Neither of those things are great.
I guess my main thing is because it's exclusive to the Super Nintendo, and it's exposing players to something that a lot of Super NES players probably hadn't experienced before. And still, to this day, like, it's... There's something refreshing about it just because of it's just... It's a really good example of what it is, and it's inspired by games that you know and love, but you may not have played a Turrican game. It's a great entry point.
Well, I do kind of like that it does feel like an Amiga game plus one. Like, it's got, right. like, an interesting kind of, like, if the Amiga had have continued to thrive into this, like, into the 90s proper, and had, like, large budgets, even though this game was made by, like, five, six people, I think.
Yeah, but, like, they all are, yeah, but,
It kind of does feel like a bit more of, like, a meeting your halfway Amiga so game.
It sounds like you guys want to talk me down.
I do. I don't think Bob does.
I'm okay.
What about below Batman, above Goemon's Great Adventure?
I like Batman.
All right.
Okay, that's where it goes. So it's going to be, as of this recording, it will be the new 224. It goes below Batman for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It goes above Goemon's Great Adventure for the Nintendo 64. Super Turrican for the Super Nintendo, not the NES, person who just typed that in. That's where it goes. Thank you.
Fallopian
It was Fallopian Groove, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Never forget.
Can I say one thing super quick before we finish out? Give me like 1 minute. By the way, you might have heard about this console, I believe called the Super NT. You might have heard about a director's cut of this game that's on it. And I think this game is really kind of a little bit rushed, especially given like the way the last world goes. You see this big Galactus-looking guy in the intro. You never fight him in this game, so I think something kind of got cut pretty hard. But I think that Director's Cut is just a beta, and, like, the only really new thing you'd find that is, like, one new level. So, if you really want to play that version, maybe don't spend a ton of money on the Super NT.
Do so if you want a Super NT. Like, it's not a bad investment, necessarily. Don't buy it just for that game.
Don't buy it just for that game.
But
it's
I will also say that that version of Super Turrican has some bugs in it and stuff like that. It's definitely not, like, the definitive version. It's just kind of like... There is no definitive version.
It's literally a beta that just kind of
is what the story here is. It's like, if you can play both, you'll get something out of it. But yeah, don't go rushing off just to get that game. But yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, thanks everybody. And check out Super Turrican if you haven't done so.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.